Hey guys, it's Monday, but we're back with a brand new episode of Waste Time with It's The Real.
Surprise, it's February, and we're calling this a February surprise. We are dropping 5 new episodes on you the same way we dropped 12 new episodes on you around Christmas. It is our gift to you, our winter break. It is a February surprise.
And we're starting off with Wyclef Jean, but before we get into this episode, I wanted to say a few words. And Jeff, jump in if you feel like it. Now, whether you've been rocking with us for nearly a decade, or if you're brand new to us, thanks to this very here podcast, we appreciate you. We're just two kids who grew up loving hip-hop music and hip-hop culture, and a decade in, we are so grateful that we've carved our own lane within this world. Whether it was weekly sketch videos, absurdist interviews on MTV, podcasts, or music videos, you guys have been there to support, to spread the word, and to push us forward.
In just a few weeks, we are going to be living out our dream and headlining SOBs here in New York City. It is called Your Girls Tour. And you know who's been on that stage. Everybody from Kanye to Drake to John Legend to 2 Chainz and now us. And now, having attended a million concerts at SOBs over the last 10 years, we know what kind of opportunity this is, and we've been working very hard over the last 2 months getting ready for an unforgettable night.
So, listen, we don't just want to show up at SOBs on February 23rd. Like we've done our whole career, let's aim for the sky and people. Let's sell SOBs out.
Now, this is where you can help. New York City.
Brooklyn.
The Bronx.
Westchester.
New Jersey.
Connecticut.
South Harlem.
And beyond.
If you love It's The Real, if you appreciate what we bring to the game, if our podcast is the soundtrack to your commute, if we can bring laughs to an otherwise shitty day, show us some love for this concert and buy your tickets today to Your Girls Tour on February 23rd. Tickets are literally the price of a movie, and please know that this night will be a movie.
It's definitely going to be a movie. Go to itsthereal.com right now, and let's make history together. Now, Jeff, who do we have on the podcast today?
Today we've got Wyclef Jean from the Fugees, from his solo career, from the motorcycle, from Haiti, all of that.
This is an episode that is, it's not your normal Wyclef Jean interview.
We ask all the questions that other interviewers are afraid to ask.
That's right. This is a great interview. He was here for a while. Great sense of humor. And I'm really excited to bring this to everyone. When should we get into it?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Petri Dish, a.k.a. For the Culture.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Fuck 12, a.k.a. Busy Night.
Yeah, and yo, this is Wyclef Jean, a.k.a. Haitian Lover, a.k.a. Toussaint Louverture King, a.k.a. Now, girls, you was in college with me, you already know Chocolate Thunder. Now, let's get into it.
Yeah, it's a waste of time, but it's the real. Clef, what's happening?
What's up, baby? It feels good to be back in this space, man.
Yo, welcome to the Upper West Side.
This is so cool, man.
No, we appreciate you coming through.
I'm feeling the love. You know, for me, this is natural. Like, the Fugees, the score.
Yeah.
Literally,
was recorded
the Booger
in this
Basement
apartment.
Oh. Was recorded in this apartment.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was recorded in the Booger Basement. So, literally, you would walk in the hood, you know, just go downstairs to the basement. My aunt just be cooking upstairs. Like, hey, just go to the basement.
So... You spent much of your adolescence in New Jersey, right?
Yeah, yeah. Between Brooklyn and New Jersey, because what happens is I came from Haiti when I was 10, mm-hmm. lived in Brooklyn. So my grandma and everybody's in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So then my father felt Jersey would be better, mm-hmm. because we was getting into a lot of trouble in Brooklyn.
Where in Brooklyn?
And I was in Marlboro Hill Projects, mm-hmm. Coney Island. Then after that, I was over on Flatbush. Then Nostrand, Utica, Avenue J.
Wow. Every train stop.
Yeah, they literally was like, you know, we was moving around. And finally, my father, who he used to transport cars from like one location to another, barely could speak English. Mm-hmm. But one day, I guess he was transporting a car from New York to New Jersey, and he sees this sign, and the sign says Garden State, right?
Yeah.
And he from Haiti. So he read this sign like, a state of gardens.
Well,
and he was a farmer, so he's like, "Yo, we gonna move to farmland."
Oh my god!
So, and then we end up in East Orange and in Newark.
Well, Orange surprisingly doesn't farm oranges.
But you know what's interesting to us is like if we think about like famous rappers from New Jersey, like everyone has the same list, right? It's like Queen Latifah, Naughty by Nature,
Joe Budden,
Redman. But like, I feel like people don't give you your Jersey props. How much was New Jersey a part of making who you are today?
I mean, well, it's as crazy as to say, like, I will be in the New Jersey Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, finally, you know, they are giving me a prize. Because you know what happened with Jersey? I don't know how much more Jerseyan I could be.
They should name a rest stop after you.
Yeah. To actually.
Yeah, fuck Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah, exactly. So Catholic high school, East Orange, New Jersey, Our Lady Help of Christian. That's where I went to. Mm-hmm. Then high school, I went to Vellsburg High School in Newark. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm straight up South Orange bully heavy. So I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I think it's because when I rep, I'm always repping Jersey and Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And then because my grandma, because that side of the West Indies, that, you know, every weekend we be in Brooklyn. But, you know, Jersey is where I credit a lot of it to. You know, battle rapping, just studying, learning the culture, the versatility of music from rock to rap, all of that I learned in Jersey, you know.
By the way, we were just talking about how you're a huge battle rap fan, like Smack DVDs and all that.
Well, I mean, I'm part of the... So when I was battling in high school, my name was... My first name is Nell. So my name was Nelly Nell. And yeah, anybody who's listening to this from Vellsburg, you already know I used to tear their asses in half. So I've never... So, you know, battle rapping for me was personal because coming from Haiti and they was picking on Haitian kids, I felt like if I could get my words together, I would have so much to say. So whenever I battled, it was very personally. And look at my English. It was very personally. That's the Haitian coming out. It was very personally. You see? Personally.
We have some good friend of ours named Renaud and Wozni who are Haitian and proud Haitians and
good,
all that.
Good, good.
And they came on the podcast and they were talking about there's lots of like speculation online as to who is secretly Haitian, and they were naming because there's always
like
been like
Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, Russell Westbrook and Shaquille O'Neal and LeBron James and Mary J. Blige, and a lot of people like speculate that, you know, YG they think is like secretly Haitian. Do you have any
secret Haitians?
Yeah, any people you think are
Man, it's
Haitian.
So funny because when we started this movement, you know what I'm saying to you, we had the Zoe Pound, you know what I'm saying? So Maka Zoe, that's my brother. He's doing double life in prison.
Wow.
Everybody you hear in Zoe Pound, that's the leader of the Zoe, my good friend. So you also have those guys that would put Haitian in front of their names, like Haitian Jack.
He'll right, let
you
yeah.
know, yo, I'm Haitian.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so funny because Usher, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
me and Usher,
one.
Listen, listen. So I'm the one who started the Usher rumor.
Oh, you did?
Okay. Ask Usher when you're interviewing.
Yeah,
he'll tell
yeah.
y'all. Mm-hmm. So I used to do an event in Miami every year. Like, this is like way before all the crazy events that are popping now. So I had one of the events in Bayfront Park. So I was caking because I was the only event. So basically, if you was a celebrity, you know, I'll bring you out every year and we'll rock. So I brought Usher out one year. So Usher was like, what I'm going to do? I said, yo, you know me. We're going to go out there and we're going to catch a vibe. So literally when Usher went, I gave him like a Creole word. I was like the basic Creole word. You know what I mean? I was like, say Shalom Sakpase. Now I was like, say Sakpase, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he goes out there and he's doing his thing. And then he's like, Sakpase na boule. All of a sudden, the Haitians was like, yo, I told you, man. I told you Usher's Haitian, man. Like, yo, I don't know how he kept it that long, man. Yo, and even when I talk, Haitians got this thing in their brain. When they put it in their brain, you can't talk sense to them about who's Haitian or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like when I was watching like My Fat Greek with
Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Yeah. That's straight up how the Haitians are. They want to tie, and I guess it's because we barely had people that wanted to claim us. You see what I'm saying to you?
Right.
So it was like, yo, when I was going in the Grammys, I was like, yo, this the days of people not knowing who Haitians are. It's over.
Right.
I'm going to wear my Haitian flag and we're going to set a new era. But it's so funny because even before that, even when I talked to some Haitians, they was like, man, that was brave of you because it wasn't really cool. We was more acting like we were Jamaicans. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
So now every click is protected by a Zoe.
Another thing I want to talk about too is Live at Daryl's House.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, we're the biggest Hall & Oates fans ever.
Likewise.
And what is it like to go to his house and just jam?
I mean, it's surreal, you know what I mean? Like I said, like for me, like, you know, the small time I spent in college, like, you know, I've had like campus bands, you know what I'm saying to you? So like just being like deep into the culture, like Hall & Oates was one of them bands like I studied because they had so much soul in their music. And I was like, yo, how's this dude playing the keys? He sounded like Stevie Wonder with these chords, you know, and their harmonies.
Oh my God.
Was crazy. So so Dara gave him I had an idea, and we're still recording it for Carnival 3. It's not finished yet. So I had an idea, Pusher T.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Me, and I was like, well, what happens if, you know, I was like, Daryl's alive, so we're going to find the legend.
Right.
And we're going to rock with him. So, yo, dude, going over there and seeing the guy real time, it was like watching an alien, because it's almost like what he's doing on the keys. He opens up his voice, and dude sounds the same. And it was an incredible experience for me. Because those are the people, like, because I'm so, like, ahead of my time, bro. Like, I'm just, like, way, like, when someone's thinking of now. I mean, I walk around with my guitar, as you can see.
Yeah.
I think, like, I'm from the 60s or something. I was just recreated or something.
That's behind time.
Right? Yeah. I'm behind time. I'm, like, so back, like, you know what I mean? I'm, like, so, like, old into that spirit. So mm-hmm. when them guys see me, whether if it's him, whether if it's... there's another one that I hadn't gone to in November. Bob Dylan.
Mm. Oh, right. Bob
yeah,
Dylan.
That guy. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So whether if it's like Dylan or getting a chance to jam with Prince in his when he has the place in California when he did that, or spending time with Michael Jackson in the studio, it bugs me out because it's almost like you got to pinch yourself literally.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, yo, this is like my, you guys, y'all the soundtrack to my life. I was just gushing out there. Over Tony.
Oh my God.
And I was like, yo, Tony, y'all understand, man. It never rained. I said, I couldn't even speak English, but I still was like, it never rained in Southern California. They tell me. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, Tony, Haitian too. Yeah.
I feel like you're like the king of the weird collab. Like you like really go outside the box and you're like, you'll pull in The Rock.
The Rock.
Yo, dude, this is where it comes from, right?
Talk about ahead of your time, by the way.
Yeah, shout out to The Rock, my man. So this is where it comes from. I'm from the church, right? So like the movie The Five Heartbeats, mm-hmm. I'm choir boy.
Mm-hmm.
So every Sunday in my daddy's church, I had to pick the tenor that I was going to sing and I had to put all the songs together. So now when the hymn book didn't have no song, my daddy looked at me and was like, well, you make up a song then. So for me, from the level of a composer, like I was into like Bach and I was into Gershwin and mm-hmm. I was into Quincy Jones. So I always believe that, you know, a body of work, what makes it more interesting is what people are not expecting, right? So when I'm watching wrestling at the time, I was a fan of The Rock. And I love the phrase, it doesn't matter. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, yo, I'm going to do it kind of with The Rock. Really, Clef? Here you go again. What was you smoking today?
Nothing. What were you smoking? Okay.
So then it's like, I get with The Rock and we does this amazing, you know, video. And for me, it's sort of like, you know, the fans be having this love and hate relationship with me because it'd be like, which Wyclef are we going to get today? You know, are we going to get the spitter? Are we going to get the weirdo? Are we going to get, you know what I'm saying, to you? But that's what keeps my life interesting.
Yeah. Right?
Well, here's another Haitian thing. Was your mother into wrestling?
My grandmother. So wrestling is deep. Like, don't know if, look, you could say whatever you want about me on Twitter. Say whatever you want, you know what I'm saying to you? And you know I don't take it offended. I don't take offense to it. You know what I'm saying to you? And I won't fight you on Twitter. I don't even beef back. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, this is my gym. Meet me here with your boxing gloves and we're good.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ever diss wrestling, lucha libre, I will hurt you on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I will find you. I will DM you. I will come get you.
Who's your favorite wrestler?
You don't diss lucha libre. You know, you have Jimmy Superfly Snooker.
Mm-hmm.
Snooker was deep because Snooker was doing a lot of the acrobat stuff in the beginning. So I got so deep into wrestling, I wanted to know why the hell they were putting the mask on their face. This is not, we ain't talking about wrestling now for people that's listening.
Right.
We're talking about lucha libre.
Yeah, right. Real like.
Yeah, real like Mexican wrestling.
That's right. So a lot of the Mexican kids, dude, they wore the mask because they didn't want their parents to know what they were doing.
Really?
Yes. And they was doing, so they went to wrestle, get their little money, go back to do whatever they was doing. So then I even found that culture even more fascinating. You know what I mean? As a Haitian, I wanted to throw on a mask and go out there.
Well, you know, were you in the basement, like getting your cousins and just like, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Doing the people's elbow.
Yeah. Well, we very, very big. I'm very, very big into martial arts. The whole thing, though, like I was into like the Gracies. Like Royce Gracie, the entire Gracie family before the whole UFC thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like these, the original mixed martial arts. So I'm very into it, and I love to fight. It's one of my fortes, but for fun. You feel me?
Yeah.
But you know, it's ill. Like, you know, like to like jab at you guys. So one day we all should go to the gym and just have like a.
Have you seen my arms?
No, but that's what's going to make it fun. We're going to do like some cool shit.
Yeah.
We could do some like cool. You know what? Martial arts takes you to a very deep place, like Bruce Lee. Mm-hmm. You know, different. Just the level of like chi. What you can actually accomplish with your human body, bro.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'll be surprised.
You're
I mean,
speaking to us specifically. You're saying that we have it in within
oh,
us.
Oh, yeah. Y'all definitely got it within you. I know some people are saying, man. Freak all that lucha libre. If I'm trying to get in shape, man, all I got to do is read the Kama Sutra and practice the positions. You know what I mean? So that works too.
How about another random, seemingly random collaboration, which was Kenny Rogers?
That was bugged out.
Yeah.
So
the dub plate.
Yeah. So, of course, you guys know about battle rap culture, so you're very in tune. So the dub plate is another form of culture.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about who could collect the dub plate. So I got my first Stone Love tape. And for those who are like, well, what's Stone Love? It's a sound system like Major Lazer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So one day, man, you know, in my older days, I was like, okay, I got a Sound Clash in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, yo, I'm going to call Kenny Rogers. I need a dub play from Kenny Rogers because every West Indian people that's listening to this understands the importance of wrestling. The importance of country music. This is not a weird thing for the island. Like when I say, yo, I know more country music than people in Nashville, people trip out. I'm like, that's just one of the things in the islands. So, and then, you know, in Jamaica, people, you know, them dudes love to be bad man, gunslinger, me man, seeing original man. So, yo, so the man, them a come upon high noon, seeing. So when a man approach you upon high noon and say, eh, so you're ready to war with me? All right, man, before we are war, we are play a song. Yeah, what you want here? Yo, man, play some Blood Clot Kenny Rogers. So, like, okay, play the Gambler before they shoot it out.
So wait, were people dressing up like country western down in the islands?
Dude, the gunslinging culture is a heavy Caribbean culture. I think a lot of it, and when I tell you that, because when we talk about the islands, it's the islands,
right? Mm-hmm.
Haiti, Cuba, Santo Domingo, Puerto Rico. I think sometimes they try to be like, oh, Jamaica. No, it's the same thing. It's like, it's the gun culture thing is just something. You know what I mean? Now, when you're sitting in the hood, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your daddy got one TV with a hanger in it.
Mm-hmm.
And now he, you only watching what he wants you to watch.
Right.
So for us, it was either the Muppet Show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was the Westerns. You see what I'm saying to you? So the Westerns, you got like, everyone talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Right.
But if you want to really check out a crazy Western, it's called Mr. Nobody.
Mm.
You ever heard of that?
Mm-mm.
Man, I think it's Mr. an Akon song.
Yeah. Yo, Mr. Nobody was so gangster that they shot one of his arms off, right? And then he went back and built his arm and made a gun out of his arm. So now he cheating at high noon. All he do is pull his arm out.
I like how you're just juxtaposing that with the Muppets. Like, those are the two things you're going to watch. Big Bird gets his arm blown off.
So back to how did you get in touch with Kenny Rogers?
So I call up Kenny, and I'm like, Kenny, what's up? And as strange as people try to make it seem, we're just musicians, right? I got a guitar here. Kenny has a guitar. We sing. So I'm like, Kenny, I need you to do something for me, man. You know, The Gambler, I need you to sing it, but I need you to kill people on this song. And Kenny Rogers, so gangster. He ain't even question who I wanted him to kill. He didn't even want to know the theory of the killing.
Right.
He didn't he understood it was musically killing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sent him the words, you know what I mean? You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, know when to run. You got to, you know, and he did it right away. I mean, the quickest verses I got back were from Kenny Rogers and Lil Wayne. Those were probably the quickest returns.
That's awesome.
Like,
which is how fast?
Really, like in an hour.
Wow.
Like Lil Wayne verse for Sweetest Girl. Yeah. Literally, I sent him. And I got it back in an hour. Kenny Rogers, I had the conversation. I sent it. I still haven't gotten my Willie Nelson dub plate yet, though.
Yo, Willie.
Willie's slacking.
Yeah.
Willie probably high somewhere right now.
Yes, probably.
Did Kenny Rogers know what a ducat was?
He knew what a dub plate was because I broke it down to him. He understood it. You see what I'm saying to you?
Mm.
And if I wanted Kenny Rogers to be like, tell a motherfucker that he would say it, because he understood that it was in the arena
mm-hmm.
of one DJ versus another DJ. Just like you watch Nashville, one country star versus another. Yes. So they get it with the theory, yeah.
How did you get the Whitney Houston dub plate?
Same way. So the dub plate thing is a hobby of mine. Mm-hmm. So I just love to collect people singing the songs that a lot of the songs that I write, I like to get them in dub plate form. Then as a fan, I love to get stuff that no one else can get.
Mm-hmm.
So with Whitney, she was so charming. I was like, Whitney, I need you to do this. And at the time, Dennis Brown died.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know who Dennis Brown was. And I was like, yo, Whitney, say Dennis Brown, rest in peace. She was like, I'll say rest in peace, but I don't know who Dennis Brown is, Clef. You know that, right? So she was like, Dennis Brown. And I was like, okay, do this part. Be like, Mun like White Clef. Mun like, you know, and she's just doing it and laughing.
Mm.
And then she basically cut it for me. I just walked it through it, and everyone enjoyed doing the dub plays because for them it was just something weird and fun. Like they didn't know, you know. I even got Kenny G. I got dub plays from Kenny G. Like,
how do you have a, like, he doesn't sing?
I had Kenny G on some patois. I will send you Kenny G, and you will trip out. He's going, hey, this is Kenny G. This is the Jewish version of the refugee camp. Sound boy, killer boy. I'm straight up. And then he goes into,
do you realize if you were an aux cord DJ today and you had those dub plates, how much you would like kill any party you went to with just dropping those in there?
Yeah, you know, so one of the things that I want to do is, so I love DJing as a soundboard. So mm-hmm. the same way you see Major Lazer in Amar, that's what I am. So my refugee sound has always been around.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I did the score, that's like, I'm thinking like dub plate.
Right.
Killing Me Softly was done originally in a dub plate form.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we send it to the publishers, because I ain't know nothing.
Yeah.
They was like, listen, it's either you sing it regular or you don't do the song. Or y'all don't do the song. There'll be no talking about killing and gushing people on this. And I was like, you know what? We don't got time to explain this to the publishers. Let's just do it regularly. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But one of the things I definitely want to do is make sure that the sound part of the refugee sound system of my life, like that part of it, putting out music that's in an eclectic form that people wouldn't know. Just
eclectic
sound,
form, really.
SoundCloud vibes, you know what I mean? So we look forward to that.
What's the difference between getting Killing Me Softly cleared and then getting working with the Bee Gees to get
Staying Alive
cleared?
Yeah. Well, the Staying Alive, it was a little easier because with the whole Roberta Flack thing, we was coming from a point of view of killing this sound boy with this sound. They didn't get it.
Mm.
With the Bee Gees, I mean, the minute they heard it, they just got it. They just thought it was a cool twist of their record, you know, Staying Alive.
Yeah.
So usually, like, when I take these covers, I have to be a fan first of the record, of the movie, of the story, because I want to paint this picture. So with the Bee Gees one, Staying Alive, if you've seen it, we took it all the way, like, even all the way down to the John Travolta video. Like, we took it all the way, and that's what was cool about it.
So going back to Jersey, what was growing up in Jersey like in middle school, high school for a Haitian refugee?
I mean, it was no joke. I mean, I lived in South Orange Avenue, and at the time, you know, it was a lot of stealing cars. Basically, when my daddy decided he's going to put the church 1108 South Orange, that was the hub of the car theft. You know, like you could hear my dad preaching, and the Lord is coming. Outside, And literally, my dad was gangster, man. He would look at us and go, go get the car. Go get the car. And we got to literally go to the hood now. Mm-hmm. And I got to get the car.
How old were you?
I was like 16.
Yeah.
And then when I go get the car.
Mm-hmm. What are you bringing with you?
You're going to give me the car.
Yeah.
I go with two of my cousins. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I come in peace first.
Like a wrench?
No, not at all. Because watching the cowboy movies, mm-hmm. the first thing about the cowboy movies, you young guys have to learn.
The spurs.
The art of negotiation. Mm-hmm. Spurs, I caught you. So we go in peace first, you feel me? So I go to give you the gospel. Now, I'm telling Moses is telling Pharaoh,
yeah.
Let my people go. Now, you give me the cars back. Because if you don't do that and I come back with the raft, you ain't going to, you know. So nine times out of ten, we got the cars back in a peaceful fashion.
But 10% that 10th one, yeah.
10% of that, those that know me, I mean, it's even in my book, Purpose, you know, one time I'm in the hood and I'm looking outside the window and my brother goes to the Chinese store. And inside of this Chinese store, two big dudes is outside. And when he's walking in, I see they're having a conversation with him. And they just slapped him up. So I'm waiting for my brother to slap them back. And his name is Sadek. And he just comes back to the house. So I'm like, Deck, what happened? He's like, yo, I have to slap him. I know that you here. So I just need you to go get me my respect back, right? I'm like, oh, really? You could just, you know? And the kids are bigger than him. And of course, once again, as a Haitian living in America, young refugee, by the time I looked out by the Chinese store, it was like five or six of them. So I was like, okay, I have to come up with a strategy. True story. I got one of my mama's old minks. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like when you in the hood, sometimes your mama thinks she rich, she want to be on the come up. So all this mink looking like squirrels, you know what I mean? So she had I kid you not, it was like a line of, it wasn't real squirrels, people, but it was a line of squirrels that was like a scarf.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It was weird. It was like seven squirrels connected to a scarf.
Yeah.
So I got that. Mm-hmm. I went and I got my daddy's machete, and then I went and got salt, and I put a bunch of salt in my pocket, right? Because I got a plan. I got a scheme. I got to go with antics.
This is some hell of a scheme.
I know.
Yeah, because I'm not going to let it's six dudes. I got to figure out how I'm going to strategize them and psych them to get the one I want.
This is like a martial arts movie right here.
You feel
here.
Me?
Yeah.
So I show up in front of the Chinese store, and I'm like, yo, I already knew the one that got my brother. Mm-hmm. I was like, yo, man, why you slap my brother? But the one I said that to, I was talking to another one so I could fake that one out, the one that I want to grab. So then now all the other ones are going to be off their guard.
Right.
And they're not going to protect the one that I want. So my brother stand in front of him. So now the minute I see them coming, I just go in my pocket. Whoosh. These dudes see the salt flying through the air. And all of a sudden, there's seven squirrels coming from the air. Some David Blaine shit. You feel me? And then they just hear me. Oh, I'm going to manger, no, Kounia. I'm going to manger, no, I'm manger, no. They say, there go them Haitians with that voodoo shit. Run, nigga. So, dudes start taking off. But the one I want, I grabbed them.
Oh, my God.
Jesus. I grabbed them. And I took them. And I put them in the headlock. And here I am in the middle of South Orange Avenue now with a machete in my hand. Mm-hmm. And I got him in the lock choker and I'm walking him back to the church. And I get back to the church now and then this kid is terrified. So I let him go and I told my brother, I said, yo, get your respect back. You know what I'm saying to you? Like he slapped you, slapped him. And my brother was like, no, you know what I mean? You can't be doing that. It got to be about peace. You know what I'm saying? And I looked at my brother. I wanted to kill him. Well, I was like, do you understand?
You had a machete on you. So.
I could have went to jail. I could have did anything. I did all of this for you. But then later in that neighborhood, they started calling us the crazy Haitians.
Well, for good reason. You guys could have been like the squirrel guys or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, it was like, boys. Yo, that dude was like, yo, all we know. And then the myth was so funny. They was like, yo, that dude Clef, man, all we saw, he had white sparks, and out of the air, seven squirrels showed up. So today, they still tell that tale to like little kids coming up. I come around the block, they be like, oh, they go to Voodoo, man, yo.
All they see on your music videos is just like salt and squirrels. So when do you really like figure out, all right, music isn't just going to be a hobby. This is going to be like my way of life and my way out of here.
Man, you know, it started for me in high school. So in high school, I was like 15, just searching for it. And a gym teacher by the name of Wayne Slappy, who was working on a movie called Lean On Me.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, you know what? You have a gift. And I'm going to bring you to New York because there's a program in New York that I think NBC at the time, no, CBS, which was a record company, was doing. We're going to put you part of this program. So he brought me on a summer internship program. And with this summer internship program, it was me, my other boy, Rob. And then we created this group. It was like, yo, if I show y'all, and I got to find these pictures, the original band I come from is literally was like five guys. It was called Exact Change. Mm-hmm. And I always credit us as the first boy rap band ever. We just was not known.
Right.
And so our first demo was done by Curtis Blow.
Whoa.
Wow.
So we, Curtis Blow, shout out to Curtis Blow.
Yeah.
He did the demo and I was in awe. After Curtis Blow.
Did you see him do the production and everything?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Curtis is the man. I mean, till today, Curtis still has... The record we did was called Rap Translator because I had a gift. I can rap in multiple languages.
Right.
So what happened was, at the time, they was like, look, man, this is a great idea, but what we're going to do is we're going to get three more guys. We're going to get one that look Hispanic, that is Hispanic, and you're going to teach him that Spanish thing you did. We're going to do that. You know, we're going to get one brother. He's going to be Asian, black. You're going to teach him that Chinese stuff you be doing. So they put this scheme around us. You know what I'm saying? And then I felt like, well, as Superman, I felt like, damn, this is kryptonite. All my power has left me. I have to give this material to other people and stand there. So you go there. And then so I was like, man, this Exact Change thing not working no more. So then when I was 17 years old, my whole life changed. Because I was part of the jazz band. And so if I came from Haiti at 10, at 17, I was on an airplane going to compete in Pasadena, California.
Wow.
Playing upright bass.
Oh, my God.
So I learned how to play like 6-7 instruments. Then I made the band. And it, man, after California, my whole life changed. Because it was like, I was like, wow. Like, I didn't know what I was going to be doing. But I liked the idea of being part of something. You know what I'm saying?
What were you playing standards, like in the jazz band or like?
So I started learning jazz when I was 15 years old. So I was playing, and I have a show, if you want to check it out, Carnegie Hall, Wyclef and Friends, mm-hmm. where I brought my old jazz teacher back and my classical teacher. And I rewrote the entire sheet music. Like for the orchestra. So we was doing songs like You Must Take the A Train to Go to Sugar Hill Way Up in Harlem. I was doing that. We also was doing boom, 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 boom. You know, like these are like the cool standards. But what I was doing was, I'll never forget it, similar to the movie Whiplash.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My jazz teacher was real tough. And what happened was,
that's an understatement from Whiplash.
Yeah. So, but what happened was, I was hearing it different. Mm-hmm. Like when I was listening to Art Blakey or like Thelonious Monk, mm-hmm. I was just hearing it different. So what I told the jazz band when the teacher wasn't there, I always remember, I said at Measure 32, we going to flip it and we going to do a hip hop rhythm over A-Train. You see? So think about it though. At that time, these teachers are so strategic and we're going to a competition, dude. Man, we get to the competition and I'm playing the upright, so I'm running the whole thing. And I look at my dudes, you know what I mean? They're like, F what the jazz teacher's saying, just follow Clef.
In competition?
In competition. And then we broke into the A Train, you know, Mustang. And then we broke boom, 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 almost like a tribe vibe.
Yeah.
Man, this jazz teacher literally killed me when I got off the stage. But while he was like on me, I was like, listen, listen, listen. They was like, first place from Felsberg High School. That's mine. So it's sort of like, it was a surreal moment because like we won.
Yeah.
And we was coming from Jersey. And it was deep because from then, I knew that I would be doing some kind of music, but I didn't know to the capacity of what it would be. I just know. I said, man, you know what? Whether if I'm teaching music or playing at a bar or at the garden, I'm going to be writing some music for some people. I didn't know where it was yet, though.
Yeah. What'd you think of Whiplash, by the way?
Very good movie. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Because as a student of the culture and that has studied, first I learned just naturally how to play music and instruments and all that. Then I went to the institution, and the institution, what they was teaching me was reverse, right? Because it's like, okay, they're like, this is Dorian. This is Mixolydian. This is Ionian. This is your homework for the night. Like, you go, and then you go like this, and then when you, I said, but I already know this. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, I said, okay, that's the name of it now. So it was like I learned in reverse. Mm-hmm. So everything that I knew how to do, the institution taught me the theory of it. And right. I know how anal those teachers are. You know what I mean? That's why I like Whiplash.
Yeah. The Carnegie Hall show.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You brought out Destiny's Child for that?
Yeah.
I was there.
Oh, you was at Carnegie?
Yeah, I was there, yeah.
Oh, crazy, my man.
Shout out to Aunt Jane for taking you.
That was like 10 years ago or something like that? Yeah,
big time. Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
You had a good time.
I had a great time.
Yeah. You didn't know who I was going to bring out when I was going to bring him out.
No, I did not. Yeah, wait, that was a crazy show. It was Destiny's Child. Who else did you bring out?
I had Stevie Wonder.
Yep.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
I had Eric Clapton.
Yeah,
I had Charlotte Church. I had Mark Anthony. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Naomi Campbell in the crowd. So that show was me taking it back to my high school days. That was the whole concept. I was like, I said, I want to do something because they was taking music from the schools. And I was like, yo, we can do something to show how important the programs in the schools are. If you notice that my band was a kid band.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it was all kids playing, and then we had the adults around the kids. But these kids were like 14 monsters. Remember the drummer and all of that? So all of that was a tribute to my high school.
Mm. Also, this was like way more than 10 years ago. When was this? Yeah. This was
like 10, 12 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. But you were there.
I was there, I promise.
And Jane was there too.
No, you definitely was there if you said Destiny Child.
Yeah. Wait, what was first of all, like, that must have been Beyonce and all of their first time at Carnegie Hall.
Yeah, of right? course.
So like, what was it like for them? Like, what was it like for you to bring them there?
Well, for me, I've always been like a culture bunny. So like with Destiny Child, after I did the carnival, I was brought in to do a record for them called No No No, because they was trying to get them a chart position, right? So,
and it worked, by the way.
Yeah, but so much more. After that, we went on tour. And all I can say is Beyonce is like a culture bunny. Like, she's always just, like, I'm performing, she's studying me and watching how I'm rocking the crowd, you know? So a lot of times, so for me, Carnegie Hall was going to be a big thing. And for me, I just wanted those artists that was there, even if they look back like 30 years when they like become super big or whatever, that's one event that they'd be like, this was a great one because that hall is so prestigious and so legendary. And you know, rappers, like a rapper be like, yo, I'm going, you know what I'm saying? I think it was probably me, maybe Latifah and Jay-Z. Mm-hmm. The only people that really, you know what I mean? And I played there before Jay, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Who are you most excited to bring out there?
That night?
Yeah.
Man.
Because you named some like very big names.
The most classic moment was Stevie Wonder was late and he was supposed to be on this song because I had Third World. Remember Third World?
Yeah.
Now that we found love, what are we going to do? And I'm like, Stevie's like, okay, I'm around the corner. I'm boom. You know what I mean? So I'm looking real cool, like jamming, but you know, I'm getting my notes, and dude's like, yo, Stevie's in the back. So if you, when you watch the tape and I go to Third World, I say, I'll be right back. I'm going to go get somebody. So literally I walk and then it's freaking Stevie Wonder with the harmonica already plugged up, ready. Oh man. Priceless moment.
Can you talk about what life was like when the Fugees really broke?
Yeah. I mean, it was a huge change. It's sort of like, it's the dreamer, you know what I mean? Like, you work hard and it didn't happen overnight. you go through like labels saying it's weird, you know, why is he holding a guitar and rapping at the same time?
So they didn't get it.
Which ghetto is he from? That no, because at the time, you got to understand, the side of hip-hop that was working, it was safe. Mm-hmm. Everybody was safe. It was like the idea of like, this guy's going to do what? He's going to play Bob Marley and then rap. Oh, she's going to sing John Lennon and then spit. Like, which part of the hood? So then they started giving it weird names. They was like, oh, maybe they're not hip-hop. Maybe they're alternative. Until they heard us on the radio. Mm-hmm. And then we'd be like, yo, throw on a beat. We're going to do what we do. And then it was like, oh.
Well, who is the A&R who signed you in the first place?
Well, we were signed to a production company first called La Jam. Mm-hmm. And I always credit the Fugees, true being the Fugees, to Khalees Bayan. Khalees is Ronald Bell. He's the one that got Kool and the Gang popping, Jungle Boogie and all of that stuff. Yeah. He's the first person we were signed to. When we was in the studio with him, I was in church. They brought me in the studio, and he heard the Fugees was four people, two guys and two girls. Mm-hmm. He was like, yo, there's a frequency going on here. And then so he was like the first person, you know what I mean? And after that, we had a product manager, and the first album was called Blunted on Reality. Mm-hmm. It was a very dark, hard album. After that, Salam Remy, who did the remix to Nappy Heads. Salam was like a mentor of mine because, you know, we were similar age, and it was like, yo, it was dope to see a kid doing it, and he already had records on the charts. Yeah. And then so me and him, we had a 101 before the Fugees, because he was like, yo, I heard you a scientist like me. So we had a whole crazy talk. Then I bought the Fugees. Mm-hmm. We did Nappy Heads, which was incredible. We recorded it and flew back to Europe. It was opening up for Das Effects. Wow. So here we are at a Das Effect. Bums, give me the bums. Yep. Give me the bum hunt. I got the door. The rapper, bum, bum, and I can old dilly dum. And we like, yo, and we're the Fugees. And we're opening up for Das Effects. Can you imagine this underground place? And then I show up, dong, 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 you know? Mm-hmm. And the kids start to vibe, you know? And even Das Effects, they look surprised because they didn't even see what was going on. It just looked like, what's going on here? Because we're Das Effects and we're Bum Skibbity Bum Hunt. And these kids don't have a record out yet, but they're just playing music and the crowd is just going with it. Like, what are we missing here? You know,
they thought the crowd wanted effects, you know?
Yeah, but they did. But what happens is the crowd wanted more than effects. Mm-hmm. And if you give them music, they're going to accept the music. And the thing is, I think that day they started to notice, holy crap.
Yeah, like this like wave is like starting to pass.
Because my thing was like, we wanted to be a hip hop band. Like, we was like, yo, I'm not, we got to play instruments. Like, I was like, we have to be different. The only thing that's going to separate us, when we show up, people like, they're really singing. Mm-hmm. They're really playing. They're so versatile. So we had that in our head. So by the time the score blew up, we was like in England. Mm. And we was touring. We was moving around. And by the time you call six of your friends, you know what I'm saying to you, it's really off the TV by then. You know what I mean? And that reality struck. Because, like, within that year, you know what I mean? Like, it's crazy because you're, like, 20-something, and then you have more money than, like, people will have in an entire, like, four lifetimes, you know?
I mean,
than
an island that you came from.
Yeah. And then when people was talking about, like, they be on jets and all of that, right? Mm. Yo, we was, like, flying the Concorde. So it wasn't even, it was like a... It was like some spaceship, like, you know what I mean? That literally take you from New York to France in like 3 hours, like defining the
yeah.
So for me, that was the coolest thing I loved about the Fugees. The music was great.
Yeah.
But every time we're better. Like, you know what I mean? You know how artists be like, I don't want to go on a plane. Like, yo, we on a Concorde. Let's go.
Did you visit the pilot?
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yo, that
you got
plane,
your wings?
Yo, that plane is so small, bro.
How small is it?
Man, that plane is so small, I couldn't even see my face, man. Now, that plane is small.
Wait, you were in Europe, and you guys broke, and then you came back to America, and we're just like, oh.
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time. That's crazy. You know what I mean? Yeah, because we broke in Europe. And then in America, we ain't breaking the East Coast first, no matter what anybody said.
That's what I've been saying. Yeah,
we broke in the West Coast.
Really?
Like, when everybody was listening to Tribe and all of that, we love Tribe and all of that. Mm-hmm. Lauren was listening to Tribe and all that. Me, I was listening to Hieroglyphics. Mm-hmm. I was completely in Oakland. Mm-hmm. I liked the military of Oakland. I liked the whole movement of what Oakland was doing. And I identify with them dudes. That's why some of the score, when you hearing like me going, we used to be number 10. Yeah. Now we're permanent at one. And a, like, if you listen to the Hieroglyphics, like a lot of their movement, they had like these albums that were moody. You know, you're under like 7 blunts a day,
mm-hmm. right.
to add to what was going on.
You know, in reality.
So
right, right.
Yeah. You're like zoning into this thing. So by the time we get to New York, it was crazy. I remember one night, Salam was like, Funkmaster Flex is going to play the record, right? So we're listening. Flex keeps playing the instrumental, dropping, in, you know, how he breaks the record.
Pull
and
over.
Out of nowhere, he's like, yo, Mona Lisa, can I get, man, the minute I heard that, I ran to the phone. Yo, we don't have that. Man, by the time I got back to the radio, the song was off.
Oh, that had to be the biggest thing ever.
Biggest thing ever, man.
And what was your inspiration when you made The Carnival, the first one?
The Carnival was just, after the score, I was someone who was very reluctant with commercialism, if that makes sense. Not the sense of selling out, but I was watching a pattern after bands sell 18 million and the audience is like, and it's not even the audience, it's a trick. It'd be more the record company that's like, yo, we want another, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So while I was doing the score, I was like, yo, I'm going to build a piece of painting and it's going to be like Basquiat and I'm going to do something and put all the countries together. So I wanted to create, at the time I was like, yo, I want to create shuffle eclectic music, you know, and call it like eclectic music where, because I'm a kid that grew up with the Outfielders.
Sure.
Then I grew up with Mobb Deep, mm-hmm. you know. Then I grew up with Petra, the rock band. Then I got the Police Synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
So in my brain, I didn't see it divided. I was like, yo, I'm going to create a jukebox. Mm-hmm. And this jukebox, I'm going to take them on that journey. And that journey is what we have in Brooklyn, you know, the West Indian Day Parade. Every year you can see that. So we wanted to bring that journey. And at the time, it was challenging, like I said. Where I was at, they wasn't playing Spanish music like on commercial radio. You know, like I used to move with like Evie Queen. And so by the time I bought Celia Cruz and it was like, we're going to do this song, not only similar to Daryl Hall, mm-hmm. I bought her into the session, the real person, had her sing the song, put her in the video. And so for me, once again, like when I do these things, like I don't just think audio. I think visual. I think like long rides. Like mm-hmm. when you're taking that long trip, if I could take you somewhere, you know? Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. how that happened.
But in terms of like reaching out to these people, like how much were you having to sell yourself and be like, hey, like so I'm Wyclef and I did this and blah, blah, blah. Or is it them being like how do you get these people on your records at that point?
Well, what happened is I really didn't have to say anything because the industry would talk, right? So mm-hmm. Quincy Jones, he'd tell you who I am. So I don't have to talk. So if Quincy's like, yo, that's the kid,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you're getting different endorsements from the IT people, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So once the IT people give you that marker stamp, then automatically when you just call, you know what I'm saying to you? It's like, oh, I'm there. Where are we doing? Because they just think that you're going to do something totally different than what they're used to, and that's sort of like what happened. Yeah.
Do you ever think there was a point in your career when you started to believe the hype yourself and like bought into everything that people were saying?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I know I'm not ordinary. Like, I mean, I left Haiti when I was 10 years old. I learned how to play by now probably like 14 different instruments by the time I was 17. At 14, I already was playing chords like Thelonious Monk. It all came from my brain. So I know that everyone has a talent. LeBron has a talent. I know that music is my thing. Like, I know it ticks me. You know what I'm saying to you? So I already knew, like, who I was. So if you already know who you are, you don't ever have to, like, sell yourself, if that makes sense. It's more like I was smiling at the critics because they was like, yo, this dude gonna burn out. You know, he's like a Kevin Hart. He's on everybody's stuff. He's on 1,000 movies. And Kevin Hart's just going like, it doesn't matter. So
that's The Rock. You're thinking of The Rock.
Yeah. So for me, oh, yeah, that's a new record, Kevin Hart and The Rock. It does matter. But for me, that's really, really where it's at. And I've never, you know, people could be like, yo, there's an ego, like, because they'd be like, yo, every artist has an ego. If an artist tell you don't have an ego, I'm nice, right? Mm-hmm. Just like you nice. But when
we're friendly.
Yeah, you're friendly. I'm nice. When I go on the court, if you play basketball and you go on the court, mm-hmm. everything is cool. But once you get on the court, don't talk to me about your last year ring and how you did. Nah, this championship going on right now. Right. The fans are tuned in at the stands.
Right.
And that is the most thing that rushes the most about the music industry that I love most when you decide that you're going to be in that commercial space. If that
yeah. makes sense. Wait, can we just talk about, because I feel like I keep bringing up like weird moments for you. Like you showed up at the Beastie Boys had a Live in Tibet concert, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, in San Francisco?
Yeah.
And you came out of that. Tell me about your time with the Beastie Boys.
I mean, that was incredible. Once again, the Fugees was a group that didn't really talk about social activism. There was just about it. And the Beastie Boys was about it. Like, mm-hmm. it wasn't like, you know, they needed to say, it was like, it's the Beastie Boys. Everyone's fans, that we got that part out the way. But the cause of what they stand for, we all gonna show up. And then it's because of people like the Beastie Boys that would make me like be like, you know what? I could be president of Haiti. Mm-hmm. You know, I can help the people in this country. I can help Africa. I have, you know, like the Beastie Boys and Bono, they gave you that range and be like, it has to be more than music. Mm. And that's what we learned about them. That's why we could still be having this conversation, because the relevancy has to be more than music. Because if you're doing music so long, okay, what makes it exciting?
Right.
The relevancy of everything else that's going around and what you stand for. And that was the connection with the Beastie Boys.
Since this has been like a whole bunch of like random like notes throughout your career, can you talk about when you worked with Jin the MC? Because we had him up here, mm-hmm. Rough Riders, and you were on the first single that he put out.
Yeah.
What was that like? With, I mean, look, he was a award-winning battle rapper.
Yeah.
And you get to come in, and what was your thinking in terms of like breaking someone like that into the major scene?
I think like if they took a little more time on his project, he would have been like an Eminem, because he can write.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Concepts, like, you know what I mean? But to me, it's so different, like the way the Fugees were different. Like, it was like we the first Haitians to ever become successful on the magnitude that we in. It didn't exist before us. So for me, I was so excited with Jin because he was coming from the battle rap culture, which I'm obsessed with.
Yeah.
And I followed him, you know, Sirius Jones, like watching their battles, you know what I mean? And having good days sometimes, having bad days. That's what battles is about, right? And then him focus on the album. So for me, I just felt like if he had more time, if they really, because it was it's a lot going on in the Rough Riders.
Yeah.
But I think like, because it was a bunch of different artists. Mm. But I really think like if they took time, a little more time, and said, okay, you know what? We're going to take 3 years on you.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to just let you do you, but we're going to build your project. Because he was like, to me, like, he was like, you know, like, and I could say that because I used to manage Cannabis.
Mm-hmm, right.
I know one time how crazy Cannabis was. You know what I'm saying to you?
He wore silver paint.
Yes. And I knew how Eminem is, how brilliant he was. Mm-hmm. There was just these kind of MCs that had this brilliancy. And Jin had that same thing mm-hmm. with him.
Did he teach you Chinese?
Yeah, I mean, ni hao ma. That's my man.
During that whole Cannabis LL time, was the thought in your head like, yeah, we're going after one of the biggest, most important rappers, period?
Well, you know, Cannabis had approached me on that, and he was like, you know, LL had dissed him mm-hmm. on his verse, and he was like, people told him, you know, like, I'm a tough guy undercover that is not really scared of nothing, so if he bought this to me, I would find a way to fix it. So
you bring the machete and a saw.
I was like, yo, to your point, I was like, yo, LL Cool J is the biggest rapper in the world.
Right.
Ladies love him.
Yeah.
I said, we don't want to get caught up in a net, dude, where, because I said, you know, I'm gone to November. The girls is with me right now. Yeah. I got to be real careful how we do this, because I am not getting distracted. I am not going to get Ja Rule distracted right, 50.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Where there's all these pretty women mm-hmm. screaming my name, and then I decide that I'm going to be like, F you, what you talking about, dude? And then the sexy girls run with the other rappers.
Right, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I was like, yo, we got to be smart. And then I told him, I was like, you sure you want to do this? And that's my man. I love cannabis till today. Mm-hmm. He was like, yeah. So came up with the scheme, got Mike Tyson, mm-hmm. did second round knockout. And the record exploded. Then LL got mad. He did a record called me the Bar Marley Imposter. Then I came back and I did a record called What's Clef Gotta Do With It.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
To protect the chessboard, I had Naomi Campbell diss him at the end of the record because I didn't want to lose my female base. But once again, to say that, we all look up to LL. Mm-hmm. LL is one of the greatest rappers. And at the end of the day, we go through, you know, battle rap, it's healthy. It's a phase. We all go through it. You know what I mean? But once again, at the end of the day, I thought that that was a very exciting time. Like, New York loved it. It was incredible. LL got mad. But once again, like, I'm a big LL Cool J fan. So
would you play 4-3-2-1 in your DJ set?
Of course
okay,
I would.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially DMX's verse.
Yeah. Was there any thought of ever getting cannabis to do a song for the ladies?
Well, once again, I think that cannabis, and I'll say this again because I've watched him in the studio, I think he's the blueprint to a lot of the battle rap, you know? Also, Cassidy.
Mm-hmm.
There's just some
kids. You mean breaking out of the blueprint and the battle rap?
Yeah, battle rap into mm-hmm. song.
Yeah.
But they have a gift with words. Like, so whether if they can make albums, or they're rare kids, you know what I'm saying to you? So cannabis just has a certain audience he appealed. Like I said, he could appeal to the female audiences. No, but just once again, everyone has their niche.
Mm-hmm.
Like cannabis was that kid that you threw on and you turned up your speaker. You just wanted to hear every word he was saying because you knew every two bar
right.
was a metaphor that you wasn't thinking of. So every rapper has their different styles. So you got LL, Ladies Love Cool J. You know what I'm saying to you? You got Wyclef, the Island Coconut Man. So this is what makes hip-hop.
I heard that he was the Bob Marley impersonator.
Exactly. So this is what makes hip-hop dope. You know yeah. what I mean? All of these different people.
Well, yeah. What did you think? And how did you first find out that Young Thug had a song based off of your name?
Well, I got the call from Leor yeah. Cohen. So mm-hmm. Leor and that crew.
We were actually in the room when that call was being organized.
Well, with Leor yeah. and him, yeah. So Leor was trying, you know, and I just remember Leor like, Clef, man, you know this kid loves you.
No,
man.
You got to do the impression.
Do the
action. Well, you got to do the voice.
Well, he loves you. He'll know how to place you. He'll know how to. That's all he kept telling me. He'll know how to place you. And then I got it because I was like, I knew how to play Santana.
Yeah.
Like, so every generation, you need a boost, right? A reinvention always need a boost, right?
Mm-hmm.
I always say, look, man, I said, whenever it's time for me to come back, I'm going to come back. Mm-hmm. I said, look, I'm a Rolls Royce.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the garage. You see what I'm saying to you? I might not have no gas, a little oil, but all you do is pull me out, throw that little oil in there, and throw a little gas, and you can start driving.
See, so I feel like you're more like a motorcycle.
You feel me? So once Thugger said, Wyclef John, you know, so yeah. I get to Atlanta, and he's like, look, bloody, my shirt, Haiti, my daughter named Haiti, my project's named Haiti. We even got a Haiti handshake. Man, I love Haiti. I wish I was from Haiti, man.
Was there any part of you that was like, what?
So that was so incredible, you know, as my little bloody. But once again, you can't even make this stuff up, right? Because to inspire generations, every generation get inspired by a generation. Mm-hmm. So when we went, and he was like, man, you know, I just learned how to do trap music. Let me show you why you inspire me. Started playing me all these acoustic records with 808s, these incredible hooks and all of that. And once again, I already know how amazing he was going to be because I listen to frequency.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more, because most of my songs are built off of hooks and melodies. So I'm more like, the way that this kid is patternizing his melodies is not ordinary. And so we got in and we definitely caught a vibe. And he had two records called Wyclef Jean. Like, he was debating on, he was like, yo, this sounds like you, you know? And he was like, I just wanted, see, it's like this, Bloody, because if I didn't see you and we never met each other and you heard that record, I just wanted you to feel the respect. You get what I'm saying, Bloody? So it was just, it was definitely incredible. But once again, once Thugger did that, it just brought another life to Wyclef Jean. It brought like a millennial life.
Right.
So it wasn't like, that's that injection I'm talking about. It just made his audience now pay attention, because that audience may not know the Fugees like that. That audience might not make the connection with Sweetest Girl or Hips Don't Lie. They don't know, like, they can't make that connection.
But they love 911, by the way.
Yes, yes, yes. They love 911. So
as
now,
they should.
Now everybody goes, yo, that's that Wyclef Jean kid. And you could see them online. Oh, who that? That's Future's cousin. Is that Thugger's cousin or Fuji? No, that's Future's cousin. Future without the auto-tune. That's Wyclef Jean. You could see them. No, man, that's the kid who ran for president. No, that's the kid who was on. Now it just rises a whole discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while that's going on, I'm Wyclef Jean.
Yeah.
So.
And so you Wait, guys.
Was Kanye West, the song, the one that you were on, was that also called Wyclef?
No, that one was Kanye. That originally was called Elton John.
Right.
And
yeah,
that was originally Elton called Elton John. Yeah. So the other Wyclef song, did you think that that also sounded like Wyclef
Jean?
Yeah,
but the one that he did, the one that he said is Wyclef.
Yeah.
Yo, I could play that instrumental and just wail all day to that. Like, definitely, it's sort of like he just caught the frequency.
Yeah.
And you can't, you know, it's sort of like, I'm inspired by Bob, so I can't really run. I don't know how I'm able to do it. Some people are like, yo, you sound like you one of his children.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, I could just feel the frequency. And there was a movie on Ray Charles, and when I met, was like, yo, you know, you basically have to find your voice, right? Because it's like you could be so Donny Hathaway Trench where you're like, man, I gotta, you know? So it's like when you find that space of zen. So for a kid like him, of all the work that I've done, for him to be like, this is Wyclef.
Yeah.
For him to be droning that bass on a reggae at a certain tempo,
yeah,
then he's letting you know that's that 911, that's that Gone to November. That's the Wyclef I'm looking for. You know what I'm saying to you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the recording process like with Mary for 911?
911, basically, I had wrote this song, and it was like, man, the only person I can hear singing that song is Mary J. Blige.
Did you know her?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then similar to Whitney Houston, Mary J. came in. Oh, my God. She did three takes. Every take was perfect.
Oh, my God.
And, I mean, you know, when that happens, all you could do is be like, man, I don't know what take I'm going to use, Mary. And she was like, you sure it's good? I don't know. No, it's not good. It's great. That, once again, for me, as a producer and a writer, that's some of the, that puts your mojo on 1,000, because you'd be like, yo, I just wrote for Mary. You know what I mean? Like, you feel good that she sung it and delivered it and showed up for the video.
Yeah, so, no, really.
So you had a reference track for her, too? You're like, where you sang it? And she...
I had one of my singers, yeah. So mostly when I produce, I write the song. When it goes out to the artist, they can hear the female part, right? I have a female do the part. That was the case with Mary, you know what I mean? And sometimes, like, Hips Don't Lie, when I sent it to Shakira, I had did it 2 years prior for a movie called Havana Nights. But when I sent it to Shakira, and I was like, this the part, this how you got to do it. I did it so she could sing the whole song. She was like, oh, no, 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 no. Your voice stay in this song. I just sing too, but you ain't going nowhere. So, I mean, Shakira told me I'm not going nowhere. Now, you really think I'm going to argue with that, huh?
No, you're like, please, give me some points in the album.
Exactly.
Joey Badass, you were in the studio with him. What was that like?
Incredible. And I got some Joey. Shout out to Joey Badass. He came to see me in Jersey. It was mad late. And I'm sitting on like 3 Joey Badass records right now that the world has not heard.
For you or for him?
I think I got 2 for him. And I might have 1 for myself. But
all of them are for the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, all for the world.
All
but,
for Shakira.
Yeah.
But I love him so much that I wanted to give him something. And something totally different. So I think like he definitely inspired me too, in the studio. And I think like I have like two or three ideas that I'm still putting together for him, that because I like to take my time with artists like that, because I just feel like it can't be the regular stuff. He's coming to me for something else, but that could still be in that space of euphoria. Mm-hmm. So we're searching for it, but sonically it's coming out dope. Lyrically, I don't have to tell y'all nothing. That's Joey, and it was a great experience.
Just one thing that I'm surprised we didn't touch on, but obviously Donald Trump is, you know, with this anti-immigrant, anti-refugee stuff. So I just wanted to know what your thoughts were as an actual refugee, as an actual immigrant.
Well, I mean, really, my thoughts are, it's a sensitive issue for me because my parents came over as immigrants and they were great people. They ain't break the law. And I got a chance to come over at the age of 10, you know, and when you coming from somewhere else, what you hear about America is like, yo, if you can get here, this is a welcoming place and you're going to get an opportunity. Your kids are going to get an opportunity to do whatever they're going to do. You know, I think that because the debates themselves was so like bad, like so harsh. Things that we're saying was literally dividing the country in half. So when this happens, there's like an alter reality, right? So Donald Trump has a base, right? That's dope. But to be the president of everyone, you know, you can't just tweet, listen, saw losers, you know? So because now it's not just a business. You the president of the whole place. Yeah. So that basically means to be a president, you have to be able to negotiate and to be able to talk with the people. You know, I would just said, man, like I was saying, Trump gets elected. Then the very next day, the women have this march. I just got back from the West Coast. I'm coming in the Kennedy Airport. Mm-hmm. You have this. This is what America's about. So as long as we can do this peacefully, then we're going to get to a middle ground. But what happens is if the people don't protest, then, you know, after that, who knows who's next on the watch list? I'm from Haiti.
Right.
I got a green card. Am I next on the list? You don't know who's next.
Yeah. I think that we all have to look out for all of our fellow citizens, whether they're Jewish, whether they're black, whether they're from Japan, China, you know,
the Middle East, wherever, anywhere. Yeah.
Or if you're like Mary J. Blige and Shaq and Usher and you are Haitian, right?
Yeah. That's right. Period.
Clef, thanks so much for coming through.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's The Real, the first one of what we are calling the February surprise run of podcasts. Jeff, we got a bunch more to go, but this first one, if people are looking for more that sound just like this, where can they go?
You can always go to soundcloud.com/awasteoftime. You can also go to soundcloud.com/itsthereal to check out all of our music. You can go to iTunes and search for A Waste of Time with It's The Real. We are also on Instagram at It's The Real, Twitter at It's The Real, Facebook at It's The Real, Snapchat, do not look for It's The Real, fuck It's The Real on Snapchat. We are It's The Real and It's The Real Eric.
So we've gone through over 100 episodes of this podcast, and the greatest thing is the people who have found us and passed along word for people to listen to this podcast. Jeff, it all starts with us. And we like to tell our friends to listen and spread the word. Which friend would you like to talk to right now?
I want to tell Fatima B.
Yeah.
Tell all of her friends up in Harlem to listen to our podcast. Fatima B, she's a stylish, beautiful woman.
She is. And by the way, she's styling Big Baby Drum these days.
Yes.
Shout out to Tima. Jeff, I'd like to shout out Daniel, who goes by this_is_DF. And then hit us on Twitter because he was not happy that he heard some, what he called, hardball slander. Now, he's not talking about like the MSNBC show Hardball.
No, but he probably doesn't like it.
He's talking about the movie Hardball with Keanu Reeves, which we spoke about on the 100th episode of the podcast because
somebody asked about Lil Zane. And so, of course, we had to talk about Hardball. There was a lot of Lil Zane talk.
Well,
shout out to Lil Zane.
Shout out to Lil Zane.
Shout out to Tupac.
I hope we got some more plays on Spotify for Lil Zane, wherever he is right now. Not sure. For real, for real. Shout out to the Not For Real Army out there.
Coast Guard.
And we will see you tomorrow? Yeah, tomorrow.
We have a new episode tomorrow.
February surprise, a waste of time with It's The Real. Go get your tickets for your girls tour. It's TheReal.com. See you later.